What's up, everybody? This is Dave Stovall. Thanks so much for tuning in to another Renew audio post. Why does it seem like we can either do church ministry well or do family well? How do we figure out how to do both well? How do you do church ministry effectively while staying healthy personally when it comes to your emotional, physical, and mental health? Well, recently, Daniel McCoy got to talk with an exemplary preacher from the Highway 231 Church of Christ in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, named Anthony Walker. But Anthony doesn't just excel in his preaching and leadership. He very intentionally ministers to both his church and his young family. He cultivates healthy hobbies and aims for balance without burnout. So if you'd like to hear some ideas on how an effective leader can cultivate balance and sustainability, you'll want to hear this conversation. I know it sincerely blessed me to hear it. So let's dive in with Daniel McCoy and Anthony Walker.
So when it comes to ministry and family, sometimes it can feel like an either or, you know, either I do ministry well or I do family well. Is it possible to do both well without either of them suffering?
Yes, but it's difficult. And that's, again, why I even ask for prayer for balance. I believe it can be done well in both areas without, you know, detrimentally affecting either one, but it's difficult. And the difficulty lies to me in how we view ministry. I often say that theology affects every other ology of life. So how we view God, how we view what our Christian walk is to be affects our psychology, how we process things, our philosophy, our anthropology, all of those things are affected. So that being said, at least in my case, I began in ministry very young. I was about 9 when I was baptized, but I was, you know, first in the pulpit at 11. Mm. And my mentor made sure that, you know, I wasn't one of those kind of one-off, hey, he preached his first sermon and that was it. But, you know, he had me back up, you know, by the time I, you know, just a couple of months later at my 12th birthday and, you know, I was speaking at other events, but what that did for me is it created a very, you know, prime importance of ministry, of church work, of fellowship. But at the same time, it was somewhat out of balance. So, you know, everything was put into the church. All of my efforts were, you know, I did still have, you know, hobbies and things like that, but it was just overwhelmingly. So when you mature, you know, I get married and everything, it is, okay, honey, this is it, you know? And so now everything revolves around church and then, you know, kind of being in ministry. I was in ministry before or full-time here at 231 before I got married. So when I get married, it is, hey, this is it, you know? And even with kids, okay, this is it. The problem is, it ends up negatively affecting family because they're supposed to be it. And what happens, I believe, why I say it, it's difficult to find it, is there's a psychology around, okay, well, if I say no to the church, am I really fulfilling my calling? You know, part of it is, you know, part of what we often teach is the sacrifice. Like, okay, you know, I had to sacrifice this in order for it to be. But when we look at scripture and we examine it, God never intended for men of God, women of God to leave their family to serve him. No, he actually, this is a part of ministry, but it should not negatively affect. So you have to find a balance and a peace with saying no and being okay with it. I liken it to the advent of cell phones. You know, people carry their cell phones now and they say, well, I have to have it in case of emergency, you know, even in worship service, I got to have it in case of emergency. Well, you know, 50 years ago, what did they do during emergency? We let God handle it. And so in the same way now, even with how attached we are and how deep we are in ministry, me saying no doesn't mean that the world ends. Me saying no is, you know, I have to tend to my family, which is a part of the very same ministry of the church. Mm-hmm. And God will make sure that everything works out well. And so it's kind of a faith and trust walk and an adjustment of our value system. But I believe truly that it can be done both. It is just seeking and finding that balance and peace.
Yeah. I often think that part of effective ministry that we can forget about is sustainability.
Yes.
You know, how do you do that? How do you get sustainability in your ministry for the long haul?
Yeah. So looking back at my early ministry, I felt like I was all in, and I say I felt like that. And I see now that I'm probably more all in now than I was at the time when I was single. You learn along the way, in order to sustain, you have to increase in efficiency. So instead of, sometimes you hear ministers talk about, I put, 8 hours or 12 hours into that sermon. And it can take that long. But if you keep looking at that, man, how many hours are you putting into your family? How many, you're dealing with quantity, but are you really dealing with quality? So what has helped me over the years, because, again, I was single, and then, you get married. Instantly, time, life, everything changes. So now I have to find out, how do I continue to put in this effort and intensity and depth on less physical time? So you begin to increase in quality. You begin to increase in efficiency, utilizing those times and moments more efficiently. Sustainability to me is all about getting towards being more efficient with what you do. You have children, same thing. They require time. They require full attention. There was a passage that I looked at Sunday that dealt with this, Isaiah 26 and verse 3, in essence says that when our mind is stayed on God, he gives us this peace. Okay, so I have to be able to focus on him throughout it all, but at the same time, in terms of working and sermon prep and visiting all of this, I got to use my time and my attention efficiently. So in essence, sustainability is a byproduct of increased efficiency. So I'm just as intense, if not more. I believe I'm more intense now than I was even then. I was doing a lot of busy work then. Now I'm doing more quality work, which I believe helps overall.
Yeah. Have you learned any principles from leading your family, which can kind of carry over into leading a church?
So it was family. And if I can introduce another one, gardening. My mentor is an avid gardener. And one of the things that he has always done, he's been in my life since I was about 6 years old, but he used this mantra about being a life learner, or in essence, learning from all aspects of life. So, we might be playing a card game or something, and he may drop a line. He'll say, that's just like life. Or we're watching a football game, that's just like life. And he'll drop a pearl of wisdom. So what that has done for me is begun to, what can I learn from this, not just in the moment, but how do I apply that to life? So he's an avid gardener, and he kind of got me into gardening. And in that, I've learned, for example, tomato plants. Tomato plants are actually vines. And so in order to help them to be more productive, you have to stake them. You have to put a stake down in the ground and attach them to the stake so that they grow vertically, which helps them in production. If they stay on the ground, they'll get all kinds of fungus and virus from the ground, and it will just not produce. But if you stake them up, they will become more productive. So what that does is, when I begin to have kids and I begin to see children grow like vines, they kind of go into all these things. But what I have to constantly do is stake them to the word, stake them to values, principles, and thus it helps them to grow. So in the same way, I began to learn that just like with my children, even in the church, sometimes people can be like those tomato plants. They have all kinds of potential to grow and produce, but because they're by nature like vines, they have to be staked. They have to be pulled in. They have to be treated for weeds. They have to be treated for pests. They have to be nurtured, watered, fertilized. So all of that kind of, you know, transitions from, oh, I see this in the garden. Oh, I see this in my kids. Oh, I see this in the church, which again, the principle applies in all of them. So I've had to kind of learn that patience is a good deal that, you know, children, if you're an awake parent, you'll learn patience. Again, that transitions to the church and working with church. And when I say patience, I mean it in the essence of the definition. Patience is not just having to wait, because you can impatiently wait. You know, you can be in a doctor's office and you're forced to wait, but you're not patient. But patient is being okay during the process of waiting and during the process of development. So sometimes with, you know, family transition, habits, things don't happen overnight. You have to be patient in the process of developing, in the same way with the church. You can't just implement a program or a ministry or change a direction and say, okay, everybody, we're going to do this now. Well, it's a process, and you have to be patient and give that grace and space for that development.
That's good. I want to talk about the health of a minister, but in getting there, let's first talk about unhealthy. So when you think of church leaders who might look productive on the outside, but on the inside, they're just not healthy. What are some types of unhealth that you've seen in church leaders?
When I think about that question, the thing that points out to me is activity and not productivity. We can be very active, but activity does not mean productivity. If you've ever seen a car stuck in the mud, there's a lot of activity going on, but no productivity. So sometimes, per my perspective with church, we think sometimes as ministers that we have to increase activity. And so it looks good on the outside. You'll see a church, man, they're doing a lot of things, and they're very quote unquote active. But my question goes to, are we productive? And I think that a church that is very active but is not productive is unhealthy. And by productive, I don't just mean, you know, success in what you plan to do, but success and execution in the calling of the church, making disciples. So a church can look healthy in terms of its activity and programs and, oh, we've done all of these things, but be unhealthy in productivity in executing what the call is all about. Are we really making disciples? Are we being the benevolent body that we've been called to be? Are we serving? Are we educating? Are we, by means of serving and doing the call of God, are our lives being transformed? That's the gauge for me that shows a health or unhealth. And even as it relates to ministry, I think it was at the Renew conference that I heard a speaker say, and it arrested me, and it convicted me. Sometimes as preachers, we think if I just preach it right, or if I just teach it right. But the speaker kind of alluded to the fact that Jesus's primary method of teaching was through actually walking it, you know, walking it with him. All of the sermons of Christ could probably be preached in about 30 or 40 minutes, all of them. So if we just, and even with those sermons that he preached, they didn't understand it till he died. And some of them we still don't get now, you know, we don't get the depth. But the real essence of his ministry was walking with it. It was his time with walking with Peter, that he, you know, the constant correction, the constant patience, the constant, when Peter got it, it's okay, I see. So sometimes even in our ministry, what can be unhealthy is, well, I'll just teach it, right? I'll just do more. I'll just, you know, put more lessons together. I'll just, okay. And you'll spend a lot of time doing that and miss the opportunities and windows of actually being effective in discipling. And it looks different to us because, again, we're a society that I want to see it happen. And me, you know, taking a mentee with me on a visit, you know, that doesn't look like much. He just hopped in the car with me. We prayed, we sang, we visited with him. But there's some ministry going on there. And my prayer is that it's really, really effective. That's doing what God wanted us to do. So those are kind of the parameters that I see on healthy ministry and healthy churches versus unhealthy. Now, if you want to get into the physical, I can get into that too, because I think that's important as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it.
You know, what I have seen in my own life is because of a lack of balance, ministry can begin to affect us physically, stress, diet. And again, with my mentor, he does a lot of things. He's a minister, he's a educator, he's a consultant. He does a lot of things, but he told me about how he had to begin to take care of himself physically, diet, exercise, even some of his reading and interest. You know, when I first got into ministry, I was wanting to read all the stuff that he was reading, and I was wanting to, you know, what books do I need to study? What? And it was, again, out of balance. And I remember one time traveling with him, and he had a novel. And I'm like, what does that have to do with the church? What does that have to do? He's like, hey, you can't spend all of your mental power just on the church. You won't be a well-rounded person. You won't be balanced in life. You have interest, and it's, you know, not to tell someone to engage in sin or anything. But again, I think the writer of Ecclesiastes, he lets us know, you know, we've got to take a step back and really look at some of those things that are of value. So a few years back, you know, even with myself, I began to deal with some health challenges. And I believe in part it was because of just out of balance in serving, in trying to do. So, yes, you know, I would justify, oh, it's okay that I stay up late at night because I'm studying the word. I'm studying for a lesson. No, you need to go to sleep. I think Elijah, when he was running away from Jezebel, prime lesson in that was, you know, he's running away, he gets tired, and the angel fixes him something to eat and gives him some water, and he goes to sleep. And he gets up from that and he runs for 40 days. It's like, yes, you were overwhelmed, but a part of your overwhelmed is trying to function on E. You really needed a meal and a nap. So mm-hmm. Even with us sometimes, you know, we need a meal, we need a nap. We need better diet. We need some physical activity to help our bodies stay healthy. And in turn, if those things are taken care of, then we can better serve. But, you know, it's evident in even our vehicles. You know, we drive our vehicles on bad tires and check engine light is on and low on oil and low on fuel, but we push it. And unfortunately, we do our bodies the same way. So we've got to change that.
One of the things I've noticed with you is that you seem to be a multidimensional minister. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got hobbies. You do woodworking, for example. You studied art at Lipscomb. Yes. You've got a life that's not just church ministry. And how important is it to be multidimensional and have a life that's not just church ministry?
Yeah. So I keep, you know, the mantra probably of myself this year is balance and focus. My earliest memories of life were singing and drawing. I mean, I was drawing at 4 or 5 years old. It's natural to me to do those things. And I got into high school, probably was my first art teacher. And She pushed me into different areas of art, which helped me become a well-rounded artist. I wanted to be an art teacher, but at the core of my life has always been ministry. Now, what that does is it has helped me to continue to balance my life, but at the same time, de-stress. I believe that most ministers are the kind of people that are always mentally exercising. They're always engaged. They're engaged in people's lives and conversations. They're engaged in studies and books and planning and administration and leadership. They're always engaged. And that's something that, at least for me, it's difficult to turn that completely off because I'm just a thinker. I just enjoy that. But what the other aspects of my life have helped me to do is still exercise, but in a de-stressful and calming and peaceful, cathartic method. So even now, I still engage in art. I've actually kind of transitioned in that and use a lot of that for the church. I do a lot of graphic design for the church. So there's nothing stressful about it for me. It's actually cathartic to sit down and, okay, let me, you know, make some slides or some images. I do that on the side as well. Graphic design, I do it for quite a few churches. So it's calming. My mind is still exercising, but it's almost kind of like a yoga for the mind. It's peaceful. Woodwork, the catharsis in that is, again, kind of like art, working towards the finished product. It actually kind of started on a whim for me. I've always thought in my mind that I could do it. I never took it in high school or college or anything. I just knew in the back of my mind, I bet I could do that. And when we moved to our home, my wife wanted some barn doors, and we looked at the prices of those things. And I said, I think I can do it. I got to have my tools, but I think I can do it. And again, I found another avenue that I can de-escalate, that I can peacefully, calmly exercise, but that's also productive, which gives a kind of rewarding sense. So I believe it's important, kind of going back to my mentor and guarding and reading, you know, novels occasionally, because our minds are always going. You don't want it always going in ministry. There's some things you need to do that, yes, you need to exercise, but it needs to be something that's calm. And what often happens for me in those instances are some of the best conversations I have with God. I had a ministry friend of mine that also helped in that area. He shared with me that, you know, when I'm going through a difficult process of life to start a project, and, you know, first thing I was like, well, that will only add more stress. What's the deal? And he said, well, as you work through the process or whatever you're dealing with, by the end of that, you'll also have a completed project, which in turn will reward you and will give you a lesson in itself that, man, while I was going through this, this table is a physical and tangible evidence of God working it out.
I would think that if the main point of the minister is to teach lessons and to be the authority, then it's not going to matter so much if people look at that person and say, well, that's somebody I would like to be like. But if you realize the main point is to make disciples and to relationally walk alongside people, it's going to be very important that people say, you know, this is a healthy person. This is somebody that I would like to be like. So I could see the model of, you know, being a disciple maker. I could see that being very important to have a well-rounded life and one that someone wouldn't mind, you know, modeling after.
Peter was still a fisherman. He became a fisherman of men, but he still fished. He was still a fisherman. And even at Christ's death, one of the first things he said, man, I'm getting ready to go fishing. So he was still, and he's, you know, human being. And I don't think that God calls us to, man, just abandon completely life. But obviously this is the primary purpose of life. So as you said, I'm a disciple maker. who happens to do art, who happens to preach, who happens to lead, you know, who happens to do all of these other things. But even in those things, I can use as disciple making.
Yeah, that's good. I know we're talking mainly about healthy ministers, but let's talk for a moment about healthy churches. Could you give me two or three principles that have guided you in helping to steer Highway 231 to where it's a healthy and a faithful church?
I think we're getting there. I think we're on our way from my perspective. Over time, what I believe has been a couple of those principles is a reverent look at the Word of God and not necessarily a focus on the man of God, which in turn kind of helps the church to become healthy. And so I'll break that down by saying the Word is, you know, our guide. It is our sustainer. It is our ultimate authority. The Word become flesh, dwelt among us. That's it. So if I can get everybody to have a reverent look and a holy respect for the Word, then now it begins to guide each individual life to where now I'm not, as the minister, you know, leader, whatever, I'm not pushing and dragging you into what you ought to do, but rather I'm motivating you to do what you've come to desire and want to do. So that makes for, you know, some of that foundation piece. And the other, I think I mentioned a while back as well, is having a constant, you know, look and introspective and retrospective look at our effectiveness. You know, I think that in this world that we live in, anyone can do just about anything for likes or for effect. You know, if I really wanted, you know, a million followers, there's something I could do and I could get it, you know, and it happens. But what's the effectiveness of that? What's the sustainability of that? What have we really accomplished? So, you know, early on, you know, there were some things that we were doing that I saw as purely activity. And it doesn't mean that it's bad, but in terms of what we are ultimately trying to do, it doesn't meet that goal. So we constantly, almost annually, take an examination as to what we're doing, what are we doing well, what is effective, and what's effective in doing what we're called to do. And so that cuts out a lot of that stuff, which, again, leads us from just activity to productivity. So I think those are a couple of the primary. I'm sure there's a lot of secondary things about, you know, leadership, about equipping. I think for us, one of the things that when I got to 231, the church was kind of in pain. The transition from the previous minister to me caused a lot of pain and angst in the church. And so that when I got in, I had to hit the ground running just to do some healing and therapy and okay, help us to kind of get over this hump. But what I believed and tried to follow was, you know, Jesus's model in that we need to get some men on the same page. And so we began by, you know, taking men's retreats. We've done it for 11 years now. This will be the 11th year, but getting our men on the same page to understand I'm your brother, I'm not your competitor, I'm here for you. And it's almost kind of a, you know, locker room in terms of, you know, how you hear athletes talk about, you know, those brothers in the locker room, where you hear men in the military talking about the soldier next to them. What that does is these men who have bonded in the Word and bonded to each other, it bleeds over into the family. So we were producing strong men, bonded men, which produces, you know, strong families, which contributes to a strong and healthy church. So that was another kind of area that we looked at for us. Those areas have been having a reverence for the Word, constantly reevaluating our effectiveness and getting our men bonded and focused has helped. How good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity, Psalm 133 and verse number 1.